I'm Mark Simpson, and this is Redistricting 2012, an intersection special. Redistricting will be a top issue as the legislative session gets underway this week. Lawmakers must redraw districts every 10 years. This year, the process is complicated by two constitutional amendments voters approved in 2010. The amendments prohibit lawmakers from favoring parties and incumbents and require compact districts. The session starts 2 months early so lawmakers can approve new plans and get them reviewed by the courts and the U.S. Justice Department in time for the 2012 elections. We'll hear from an expert panel in a special collaboration between WMFE Orlando and WUSF in Tampa. That's ahead on Redistricting 2012, an intersection special. This is Redistricting 2012, a collaboration between WMFE Orlando and WUSF Tampa. I'm Mark Simpson in Orlando.
And I'm Carson Cooper in Tampa. Joining us from Tallahassee is Lake Mary Republican Chris Dorworth, who is chair of the House Reapportionment Subcommittee. Welcome.
Thank you. Well, glad to be here.
And the person keeping an eye on all those lawmakers in Tallahassee is Mary Ellen Kloss, Tallahassee Bureau Chief for the Miami Herald. Thank you for joining us.
You're welcome. Good to be here.
And joining us in Orlando is Aubrey Jewett, political scientist at the University of Central Florida and a longtime politics watcher here in the Sunshine State. Aubrey, good to speak with you.
Great to be here.
So lawmakers have to draw Senate, House, and congressional districts. They have to look at this every 10 years. Both the Senate and House have already introduced maps that are going to serve as the starting point in the debate that's expected to extend all the way through the legislative session until March. So I wonder, Aubrey, under your initial look at this, who are the winners and losers?
Well, I think the winners, once again, generally will be the Florida public, who will get districts that are more even by population than they currently are. And that's the reason we do this every 10 years. And it's critically important in a fast-growing state like Florida that every 10 years we do redraw these lines and make sure that they are have even population, so that everyone is represented equally, not only in the Florida legislature, but equally in Congress as well.
And does anything stand out differently about this particular version of the process this time around?
Well, absolutely. Because Floridians voted for Amendment 5 and 6, we now have standards that the legislature has to follow when they draw the district lines. And there was a few standards before, but mainly those that were laid down by the U.S. Supreme Court or the Justice Department. But other than that, not much. And so with Amendment 5 and 6, basically what the legislature has to do is not favor or disfavor any party, not favor or disfavor any incumbent, try to follow local geography like county and city boundaries. And, of course, they also have to make sure that minorities still have the opportunity to elect the representatives of their choice. So they have a lot of different things that they have to follow. It's going to be an interesting process. It always is. Probably a little more controversial this time.
Committee Chairman Will Weatherford was invited to appear on the program. He was unable to attend, but here's what he said about how the process is coming along.
I believe that we have maps that are legal and maps that are very compliant to what we've been asked to do at the federal and state level. Likewise, we are very open to making these maps better between now and the time that we pass them during session.
So he says the maps are conforming to Amendments 5 and 6, but nothing is set in stone. So what about that, Mary Ellen Kloss? How much better can those maps be at this point?
You know, I think there is some pressure to revise these maps. I know there's been amendments already proposed to the House maps that are going to be finalized. They actually have 7 congressional maps and 5 House maps. They're narrowing those down to 3, and then they have to decide among those 3 which ones they like. The interesting thing is that the terms of the debate, I think, haven't really been defined, and either the legislature is going to define it or the court will. One of the crucial questions about whether or not these things will be revised in any way is what do they do with the minority seats and the minority access seats and minority majority seats. And I think both the House and Senate have made an attempt to preserve those seats as close to the existing configuration as possible. But the question is that really what the amendments intended, or is there some other configuration that would better serve the minority community? I think those are really unanswered questions.
We heard this argument, though, about fair districts when it was first gaining traction from Republicans and Democrats that they would create standards that would reduce the number of minority lawmakers. Mike Haridopoulos warned of the adverse effects, and Orlando Democrat Gary Siplin went so far as to say it would take, in his words, some sort of affirmative action to keep black lawmakers like him in office. So both sides, it would appear, to be in agreement on one thing, that they just want to keep their jobs.
Well, I think certainly most legislators would prefer to run in a district that's favorable to them and for their reelection, and there's nothing too surprising about that. My initial reaction to the map, and this is Aubrey Jewett, my initial reactions to the maps that have been proposed, I mean, I would give the House and Senate probably an A on the part that says don't pay attention to incumbency. We see a lot of incumbents that are no longer in their districts. I'd also give them an A for the minority districts. I mean, they certainly have created minority districts and are trying to make sure that minorities have access and can elect minorities. We're going to see an expansion, in fact, under some of the plans and have another Hispanic congressional seat, for instance, in Central Florida, possibly. So I give them high marks there. You know, probably where they get a little, you know, lower marks in my estimation is, you know, on the party thing. You still see a pretty heavily favored Republican party in these districts. And once again, this is in a state where there's a lot more registered Democrats than there are Republicans. So that's probably where I'd see, you know, the shortfall is, if there's any. And last but not least, they're supposed to follow county and city lines where possible. You know, you certainly could see in a few areas where they could have done a better job there as well.
Well, I wonder if we can bring our other voice from Tallahassee, Representative Chris Dorworth, into the conversation. You heard the comment right there, Representative, that it looks like maybe some of these districts end up favoring the GOP because there are Republican lawmakers controlling many of these key positions in the state. What do you think about that?
Well, as it was said earlier, the voters of the state of Florida passed Amendments 5 and 6 last year. And in doing that, they gave us some constitutional standard by which we had to stand by and observe, and I think we've done a good job of doing that. And, you know, just I think I just heard Dr. Jewett say that perhaps, you know, we might have done a better job. Just to give you some frame of reference, the initial maps that were proposed, and the House did 5 maps because we wanted there to be options. You know, it seemed a little heavy-handed to just come out and say this is our map, so we brought 5 maps out there, and 4 of the maps were fairly similar in makeup. And just to give you some frame of reference, it reduced the numbers of counties split in the state of Florida. Now, there are 67 counties. We reduced the number of county splits by 15. It also reduced the number of city splits by 71. And then some amendments that were brought forward in the House Redistricting Committee, when we advanced the 3 maps, reduced it by as 15 more fewer city splits. So that's a total of 86, and then 1 fewer county. So, I mean, I think that there was there's been a real push to try to do that as much as possible. The fact is, when the process lays itself out, you've got federal law standards which say that we have to not see major retrogression in the minority access seats, and then we have to go through and have districts which are remarkably similar in size. And the fact is, people don't necessarily live in perfect squares and circles to match the size there. So I think we've done a good job of reducing the number of city and county splits and making this a very compliant map with the state constitution.
But you're not aiming at a 50-50 split Democratic and Republican, are you?
No. Well, listen, the Constitution and the way it was said there, it says you can't favor or disfavor a political party. We have to comply with the law. And the law says that you have to first and foremost protect the minority access seats to make sure that minority communities are able to vote for representatives of their choosing. And we have to comply with that, number one. That's federal law. It trumps the state constitution. So we did that. The second thing it says, that you cannot favor or disfavor incumbents or, you know, based on political party. And we did that. And I will say, you know, say very clearly, I think if you, as Ms. Kloss said, you know, if you look at it, we went out there and, you know, many incumbents are living in the same district. There's not any attempt to favor an incumbent or a political party in this.
Marianne Kloss, does Broward County Republican Congressman Alan West have an argument? He points out that his congressional district, which is now split pretty much 50-50 Democratic and Republican, the new proposed map would swing him way into Democratic territory. So does he, West, a black Republican from Broward County, have just as good an argument as Corinne Brown of Duval, Lake, Marion, Orange, Putnam, Seminole County?
Well, the interesting thing is that Alan West is representing a district, even though he's black, that is not considered a minority-majority district or even a minority access seat. It has traditionally been held by white Republican men, he was able to get elected there. So that is, you know, I don't know where the courts are going to fall on something like that. His complaint is not so much that it's doesn't protect him as a black. It's that it doesn't protect him as a Republican. And he's not making this complaint. It's his Broward Republican colleagues who have basically asked both the House and Senate, whose maps coincidentally are very, very similar when it comes to Alan West's district. The end result of what they've done is they've made the district not go as far up the coast along the Republican segments in the wealthier coastal enclaves of Palm Beach County. It cuts it short. It moves his district further to the west in Broward. And in that western segment, it picks up a lot more Democrats, making it a much more competitive seat for Democrats to outmaneuver him. Now, the Republican Party has said, it doesn't matter what the maps look like. We're going to defend him. We're going to help him get reelected. This is another one of those things that it does raise some questions. Will this look like retrogression to the courts or not? I'd be interested to hear what Representative Dorworth thinks of that.
Representative Dorworth.
Well, I mean, again, you know, the voters of the state of Florida passed maps. I'm sorry, they passed Amendments 5 and 6. And in that, they gave us clear direction. And in that clear direction, you know, they said that you have to, you know, observe the, you know, certain standards, and that they wanted us to comply with that. And for us, for those of us who sit in redistricting, and I mean, I'm on the House, the Florida House subcommittee, and there's a congressional subcommittee, so I can't really speak to the specifics of Congressman West's district or the congressional map, but I can tell you that for us, that sometimes means there's discomfort. But that's what the Constitution says, and it's what we're going to do, because we're going to comply with the law and we're going to comply with the voter will. Well, and undeniably, I mean, I think, Mary Ellen, I believe your newspaper reported, and I don't want to quote your numbers, but there were something like 25 members of the Florida House caucus, or Republican caucus alone, that lived in other people's districts, and so there's going to be a lot of moving going on.
You mentioned that, Representative Dorworth, that some people are going to be ending up moving around, at least at the state legislative level. But I wonder, Aubrey Jewett, here looking at Central Florida, you got someone like Congressman John Mica, who's a longtime power player in this region, and I noticed some of the congressional proposals actually move Winter Park a little bit out of his district and over into Sandy Adams' district. If those proposals stand for Congress, that's not as much of a challenge to have to live in your actual district.
Well, I think from what I saw, at least in the Senate map, John Mica was no longer in his district, you know, the current district. But he intends to continue to run to try to serve the district that he's in, because it's a little bit north and east of of Central Florida. But he feels that he's still a good fit for that district, from what I originally read, anyway.
Does that become a political problem, though, if you end up, at least at a congressional level, not living in the district you're representing?
Well, often it can, and it's certainly one of those things that the average voter probably wouldn't know or care that much about, except for if it comes up, you know, during the campaign. And then, of course, that's up for the opponent to do that if they think that's a big issue and if they think that they can get some traction out of it.
And I just want to ask you, Mary Ellen Klass of the Miami Herald, does it remove politics at all from the equation, since we've had the Florida House drawing its districts and we've had the Florida Senate redrawing their districts? Is that the best way, do you see, to move politics out of the process, or would it be better maybe having an independent body taking over?
You know, I believe that no matter who is drawing the districts, it's all about politics. You can never take politics out of redistricting. Even if there were an independent body, there would be, I think, repercussions where people would be accusing someone else of taking politics out. And the flip side is, you know, we are a representative democracy, and we should be expecting those in office to be representing, you know, what the goal of the public is. As Professor Jewett said at the beginning, it's the public that should benefit here. Now the question is, even though they have drawn, the House has drawn maps that pit many incumbents against each other, and the Senate has as well, what is the greater good, and how is the public indeed being served? I think that they took a lot of testimony during hearings where people said, we want our community to be represented. We want our legislator to reflect our community. Now, that is not one of the standards. Keeping communities of interest together is not one of the standards imposed by the constitutional amendments, but keeping political boundaries, natural cities and county boundaries, is. So those elements should be part of the debate as this is going forward, not just what the, you know, political dynamics are. I do think, however, that because we have a legislature that is controlled extraordinarily with a supermajority vote by Republicans, it should be no surprise that these maps favor Republicans and favor them in a way that allows them to keep a majority for the next 10, possibly keep a majority for the next 10 years.
Mm-hmm. Can I follow up real quickly on that? Is GOP domination in Tallahassee really a function of how those districts were drawn? I understand it, how it could be to some degree, but 20 years ago, Democrats were in charge, and Republicans still came along to take over in fairly short order.
Yeah, and I think that's true.
And I was just going to add in that I always do point that out to my students in my Florida politics class, that you know, Democrats controlled the process and Republicans in 92, and by 96 the House and the Senate were both Republican, and so, you know, redistricting is not you know, the end all and be all, but certainly back in 2002 Republicans did gerrymand a lot and really made sure that there were Republican districts throughout the state, and that contributes. But Democrats have a lot of other problems. They've had a hard time getting good candidates. They almost always are outspent. And quite frankly, historically, despite some of the problems the Republican Party of Florida has had over the last couple of years with the Jim Greer fiasco and some of the other things, the Republican Party of Florida traditionally has just been much better organized than the Democratic Party of Florida. So you add all those other things together. And then last but not least, that the Democratic Party has been viewed in Florida by the average Floridian as being too much to the left, too liberal. And the Republican Party has managed to capture the sort of the center right. And you add those things in there. You know, so it's gerrymandering and redistricting, absolutely, but there are a lot of other things that explain why Republicans have been the majority party in this state for, well, as I said, since the fall of 96.
And I just want to say, you're listening to Redistricting 2012, a collaboration of WMFE Orlando and WUSF Tampa. I'm Mark Simpson in Orlando. Our in-studio guest is Aubrey Jewett, political scientist at University of Central Florida.
And I'm Carson Cooper in Tampa, and the subject of those hearings came up. Lawmakers held more than two dozen hearings statewide to gather input from Florida's residents before introducing their first maps. The process of drawing those maps has been compared to to Einstein's theory of relativity. So if you would keep it on a more simple level, Chris Dorworth, how do lawmakers go about drawing those maps?
Well, again, you have a series of laws that come down from the federal government requiring the protection of some districts that are that are designed to encourage participation by the minority community in electing their own elected officials, and that comes down. And we have to deal with that those laws first and foremost. And because it's federal law, it does trump our state constitution in terms of pecking order. So the first thing we do is make sure that we've complied with those. And the second thing, as you mentioned, we sat through over two dozen community meetings around the state of Florida. From the Panhandle to Key West, and you know, people were allowed to speak and make suggestions and make recommendations to really clearly outline what was important to them. And you know, it varied from across the it was across the board. You might have someone say, "Listen, this homeowners association is part of is one community," or they, you know, some might say, you know, for example, Pasco County. There's really three distinct parts of Pasco County, so they really spelled out what they thought was important. And so, you know, prior to drawing the maps, what you wanted to do was make sure that you had heard from people and gotten that commitment. We also took some extraordinary steps this year in creating a website that allowed the public to use the exact same software we had to design the maps. And I think this time around we had I believe, I think they're still submitting, but I think they had something like 165, 167 maps submitted by the public. And you can compare that with like 4, 10 years ago. So, I mean, there's a tremendous upswing in the amount of public participation that we've seen in doing that. And then we sat down, we had committee meetings, we sort of presented all the thoughts that were brought about by the public, and we actually went through the comments and said, you know, they suggested this, they suggested that, we heard this, and, you know, the committee's got some guidance from us in terms of how the best way to approach it was. You know, and then because of this, you know, because of some words that are in the Constitution like compactness, we wanted to get some direction from the committee. So, you know, for example, one thing that the committee brought forward, they said, hey, whenever possible, everybody in the state of Florida understands what a county is, I think. You know, you get that there's, you know, boundary lines that are known as county lines. And so when possible, we want to minimize the number of county splits. And the same with cities, because one of the comments we heard from so many people from the public was that there would be when possible to keep those centralized. So then our staff got together and took all that input and information, and because of the requirements that exist that we have districts, you know, congressionally speaking, there can be no variation in terms of the number, but we have a larger number in terms of how many voters can be in a district for the House and Senate. So then you set out trying to make those things even. And, you know, some people think that the map should look like perfect squares on a map. But again, in the congressional maps, you have to be plus or minus one voter. You don't have the discretion of having, you know, 2,000 voters here or there. And many times people don't live in perfect squares. So you really want to put that together in a way that complies with the law.
Easier said than done there.
Yes.
It is definitely easier said than done.
So then our staff, you know, published, made some recommendations, and we advanced in the House level 5 maps for the House and 7 maps for the Congress. And we left a month and, you know, let people make comments and let people bring it back to their district. And now, you know, on Monday, you know, we advanced 3 maps to go to the major redistricting committee. And that redistricting committee will take those 3 maps and decide on one. The Senate is working on the Senate maps, and the House and the Senate will collaborate on determining the final map for the congressional map. And that's the kind of process we have.
The heavy lifting is now underway in Tallahassee. The session's underway. Does the public have any more input at this point?
Well, certainly. I mean, all these are done in a committee forum. These are proposed committee bills, so they're kind of the property of the committee, if you will. There will be an opportunity for the public to speak. There's an opportunity for the public to still use the software, to submit amendments, to make changes, to make recommendations. And I think you heard Chairman Weatherford in his recorded blurb earlier say that, you know, we are very open to making the maps better. But, you know, whereas 10 years ago there might have been a conversation that said, hey, I live 3 streets over, change the maps around like this, that can no longer be part of the conversation. So now any change that comes out, if you can make maps more compact, if you can minimize city splits, if you can minimize county splits, if you can make it more compliant with the Constitution, make the process more transparent, that's something we're willing to look at. And it's yes, it's still very much a public involvement process as we move through, and it will ultimately be voted on by the full redistricting committee of the House and Senate, and then by all the members of the House and Senate on the floor. So, yes, there's still plenty of time for public input.
Representative, what do you think, though, about the pace of getting redistricting done within the 60-day legislative session? Is this something you anticipate will take the full time, or do you think this could be wrapped up sooner rather than later?
Well, I mean, I think we've set out a schedule. I believe that the Senate's going to send their maps over in about a week and a half, I want to say, and you know, again, just to be clear on this, and there's been some misinformation spread on this subject. When the writers of Amendments 5 and 6 did that, they had the option to put a lot of things on there. One thing they did not put in there was a change in the Constitution that would allow us to vote before 2012. The Constitution says that we can vote on maps in 2012. So, you know, we start session on Tuesday, and we go for 60 days from there, and I anticipate it will not be done the last day of session, but it's going to take some time, and you know there's got to be some collaboration in terms of what the you know what the congressional map looks like. So I mean I anticipate it'll be done with a little bit of time left in session.
Finally, for Aubrey Jewett and Mary Ellen Kloss here, do courts typically get that involved in how these maps are drawn? I mean the law says pretty much lawmakers can draw them. I mean that's it. So aside from Justice Department concerns, what would state courts have to say about them? And we'll start with Aubrey Jewett.
Well, traditionally, courts have been extremely involved in decisions about redrawing the lines every 10 years, and that's particularly true in Florida. We saw a host of lawsuits 10 years ago, 20 years ago. In fact, 20 years ago, we mentioned the 92 redistricting. The courts actually drew the congressional districts because the House and Senate, although controlled by Democrats, they couldn't agree amongst themselves on how to draw the lines. And so they sort of punted, and the federal courts had to draw the lines there. Most of the lawsuits in the last decade were more about minority districts. You know, what's the proper role for gerrymandering, basically, by racial and ethnic lines? And as Representative Dorwer said, and I agree with him, the federal government has, and the the U.S. Supreme Court has said, and the Justice Department has said, up to a certain degree, you have to take race and ethnicity into account. I think the big question for the courts this time around are going to be, how much did the legislature take into account? Or I should have put it this way. Did the legislature take into account too much? I don't know what the answer will be, but I think that's where you're going to see a lot of the legal challenges, because I think in the end, Democrats are going to be somewhat disappointed because they're going to look at those maps and say, well, if you look at the partisan balance, once again, Democrats are getting the short shrift, and I don't think they're going to be happy with that.
And Mary Ellen Kloss, do you see any big changes from the courts?
Yes, I see that it could be that the court doesn't want to get too active and doesn't want to draw too much. On the other hand, there are a lot of unanswered questions, and we really haven't spent too much time talking about the Voting Rights Act and the protections involved there, but the amendments that were passed require that the voting strength of minority districts is not reduced. But the question is, does that mean we don't reduce the minority's voting strength in the entire map or only in the existing districts? And the interpretation of both the House and Senate has been that they don't want to see anybody in an existing district no longer have the same access to a minority representative. However, that leaves people in other parts of the state who maybe had the potential to be in a minority access seat that didn't get drawn one. All those questions are not answered. And I think that we will see a lot of the debate and the challenge focused around these minority seats. Both the House and Senate have packed Democrats into minority seats in numbers that really, I think, are being questioned, and whether or not these percentages need to be 70%, 80%. That will, I think, also be something that the courts will be asked to decide. I'm not sure they will, but that'll be part of the debate.
We've been speaking with Aubrey Jewett, political scientist at the University of Central Florida, from the studios of WMFE in Orlando. Aubrey, thanks so much.
Absolutely. Glad to be here.
And joining us from Tallahassee, State Representative and Chair of the House Reapportionment Subcommittee, Chris Dorworth, and Mary Ellen Kloss, Tallahassee Bureau Chief for the Miami Herald. Thank you for joining us.
You're welcome.
Thanks for having me.
Redistricting 2012 comes your way as a collaboration between WMFE Orlando and WUSF Tampa. I'm Carson Cooper in Tampa.
And I'm Mark Simpson in Orlando. Find out more by visiting online at WMFE.org/intersection. There you can also sign up for our weekly podcast. Support for Intersection comes from our listeners. Amy Green is assistant producer. Thanks so much for listening.